Thank you. Welcome, everyone. I'm very happy to be here on behalf of my colleague, Avit, who couldn't make it out last night because of the canceled flights in D.C. And we're also representing a lot of other people because this is a consortium. So we are doing this project in collaboration with SEDPA, with CARE, with the local partners in Mali, and the funding is from USAID. So I'm going to continue our theme here. We're broadening from the individual. We've gone to the couple. Now we're going to broaden a little bit further to the social network. And then obviously we're going to also leave the shores of the U.S. and travel to West Africa. So here we are talking about unmet need. And as many of you know, there's been many years, over 20 years of investment in Mali. And we have seen high levels of knowledge of family planning, but still very high levels of unmet need for family planning. And contraceptive prevalence remains low. So this project is an attempt to address unmet need in family planning by using a social network approach to really answer the question of, you know, why do women still and men still not use family planning if they're not planning on getting pregnant this year? So what is social network analysis? So social network analysis really recognizes that individuals don't exist in a vacuum. People interact with, they learn from, they're influenced by, they get information from all of the people around them. So this type of analysis really pays more attention to the relationships and the characteristics of these relationships rather than some of those individual factors that we've been talking about, especially, for example, in our first presentation. So the best way to do network analysis is what we call the ethnographic sandwich. So the top level of red really is the ethnographic research that we do to better understand the context, to understand how people talk about and think about social norms, how they think about family planning. I'll be presenting on that ethnographic information this afternoon in a session. Then the second, or the middle slice, is the social network analysis, which we'll be talking about right now. And then our third piece of it is the in-depth interviews that we're just finishing up now in Mali, where we went back to interview people with different network statuses and family planning statuses to really confirm that we're on the right track with this analysis. So I guess we'll present that next year. So the first step in the mapping is to do a household census. So we did a census, and we obtained a list of all of the adult men and women in the village, and each was assigned a code. And at this point, we knocked on all the doors, and it didn't matter if the people were home. They just found out who was living in that house. The next step was to identify all of the men and women of reproductive age and the men married to them and go back and interview them. So we had a very high response rate, which is necessary to do a full social network map. You have to have over 80% to consider it a valid network. So we obtained that. And the interview includes background information, information on their unmet need, their attitudes toward children and fertility, and then the social network questions. So you might ask, you know, how did we develop their social network? So this is a script that basically went through and we asked each woman and each man whether they, who, to name all of the people in their social network. So we call these their network partners. We asked them who provides you material support, who gives you practical support, who gives cognitive support, which is basically who you learn from, who you get information from, and who gives you emotional support. The examples that are included in the script were examples that came out of our formative or ethnographic research there. And you can see that this really, this goes beyond just asking people who gives you information about family planning. It's really looking at who forms their network and, you know, writ large, because we believe that it's not just the direct information, but other kinds of influences that really is making a difference. So this is a tool, the matrix, that was women were and men were filling out. So once they had all of their network partners listed, then they were asked questions about each of the partners. So they were asked things like, what's your relationship with them? Is it your sister, your co-wife, your husband, the shop owner, your religious leader? Where do they live? How close do you feel to them, are you to them? How do they influence your decisions on family planning? And what do you think they think about family planning? So then we filled out that data and then proceeded to analyze it. We used SPSS to get descriptive statistics and some cross tabs, which you'll see in a minute. And then UCNet and NetDraw is a software package that's designed to do social network analysis. So we used that. So to start out a little bit with the demographics, the mean age for the women was around 30, and for the men about 40. As you can see, very little formal education, you know, 95% no education at all. Majority Muslim population, and about 30 to 50% polygamous, depending on the village. So you'll see the analysis is set up by two different villages, Kutiala and Bandiagara. They're two slightly different ethnic groups, and a little bit, Kutiala is a little more favorable to family planning. So looking at unmet need, so you can see here, again, you know, pretty low contraceptive use. Also relatively low traditional method use for a setting like this. And then this shows really our definition of unmet need. So women who are pregnant, who desire a child this year, who are breastfeeding or in postpartum amenorrhea, by their own definition say they don't need family planning, who are infertile and are not having frequent sex and are in menopause. So those are the ways that women categorize themselves as having unmet need. Now it was a little bit more complicated with men because, as I said, this is a polygamous society, so we had to ask those questions for each of their wives. And so we're saying if any of their wives have unmet need, they were classified as having unmet need. So then we also, of course, asked them about their attitudes towards family planning. And we used an index of 9 questions. And you can see that they're more favorable attitudes in Kutiala than Bandiagara. And men are a little bit more favorable than women towards family planning. And we'll talk about some of those reasons in a moment. So what's important to know in the next series of analysis, which is the network analysis, is the definition of a connector and an influencer. So you can see, for example, Conrad down at the bottom. He is a connector. He's the individual that is the shortest path to everyone else. You can think of him as the broker, the gatekeeper, the connector. And then the arrow at the top is pointing to Linda, and Linda is the nominee. She's an influencer. She's the one that everyone names. So when you say who is in your network, everyone names Linda. So she has the potential to influence a lot of people. So here's our first network map that I'm going to share with you. So this is Kutiala, the slightly more favorable village. And I'll give you some clues how to interpret this. So the bigger the box means the more influence that individual has. The pink boxes are women, sorry, but that was the easiest way to do it. The blue boxes are men. And this is one community. So, you know, what kind of strikes you here looking at this? You know, anybody have a suggestion? What do they see? What do you see in this map? Pardon? Yes, men. You see a lot of men with a lot of power, a patriarchal society. And this is patrilocal, it's patriarchal, it's very much male-dominated. And we also see a community that's very tightly connected. Okay. So let's look at this next one. This is less favorable family planning environment, and we see something a little bit different here. Anybody note something of interest, considering that we're trying to diffuse positive behaviors and family planning attitudes through this network? It's three distinct networks, and so it's less integrated, and there's some really important people in this network, which we call bridges. So you can see there's bridges between these three different networks. They're men and women, both. And we have maps that overlay family planning attitudes on this, and you can see that sometimes those bridges are favorable and sometimes not towards family planning. So you can, you know, look, we use these maps to develop interventions, but I just wanted to share with you to get a sense, oh yeah, there you can see our link people here. So this is another map. This is looking at unmet need. So if you were planning an intervention, what would strike you here? So the red ones are unmet needs. So these are women who are not using family planning but don't want to get pregnant. The blue ones have no need, and the green ones are family planning. And the size is how much influence they have over people in their community. Any thoughts here? Would you be very excited if you were trying to start an intervention in this village to reach the tipping point? Maybe not, right? So there's not a lot of family planning use. So we really don't yet have enough family planning use to really start this kind of movement that we're trying to catalyze. So we'll talk about that at the end when I can conclude, but here's another slide that's talking about people's perceptions about what their husbands and wives think about family planning. And what you'll basically see is the majority don't know what their spouse thinks about family planning, especially women. So that's the very light bar. The light bar on the top are those who aren't aware. And you can see that more women than men are not really sure what their partners are thinking about family planning. So this next slide is a little complicated, but it's pretty important. It's showing husband and wife concordance. So the first row, if you look at the top half of the slide, or the first row, it's showing women whose husbands think that they approve of family planning. And the bottom is showing, they're showing men who think their wives approve of family planning. So just to save time, if we had perfect concordance in this slide, you would see the top two rows where it says women, percent who believe that women look better would be 100%. And the bottom two rows would be zero. And the same for the row on the bottom. So if you had perfect agreement, it would be 100. And remember, this is what women said their husbands say, think, and husbands say what their wives think. So we're far from concordance. So men and women basically aren't aware of what their partners think. And there's actually a lot more support for family planning than people are aware of, which is a positive thing. So to conclude, I'll just talk a little bit about the barriers. So what we found are some pretty significant barriers to family planning use, and based, really related to gender and social control. So someone mentioned earlier the patriarchal society. So stigma, which came up in our last presentation as well, and traditional norms, which really give men a lot of control, provide an authority over women. They really provide a chilling effect to kind of catalyze and mobilize movement towards greater family planning use in this village, or in these villages. And social networks are also, we see that they're really important, critical resources to changing the situation here and to addressing unmet need, to trying to diffuse family planning. And we can call it an innovation in this village because, as you saw, very few people are using it. So, you know, we're really looking back to Everett Rogers and diffusion theory to see how can we diffuse this new, you know, this innovation in these communities. So we saw that men, you know, are in control of a lot of decisions. However, they're not well informed about family planning. I didn't show those results, but they're not well informed. They're not well linked into networks. Men and women are not linked. There's community health workers that provide family planning. No one mentioned them as part of their social networks. So they're not well linked to the community, the health workers. I mean, we understand why they're not linked to providers, but we would have hoped that they would be linked with the community health workers. We also found something very interesting, that typically there's a lot of talk about co-wives being in opposition. There's a lot of competition about having more children and getting power, you know, in your family. Mother-in-law is a lot of opposing family planning because they're supporting larger families. We did not necessarily find that the case in all families, because people who live in an extended family have to rationalize their resources. There's only a certain amount of resources that they need to use to keep everyone healthy and happy. So there was a lot of covert support by mother-in-laws and co-wives for family planning use. There was one quote, a mother-in-law who said, "I tell all of my daughters-in-law not to hide the pill packets, but to throw them in the trash so that everyone can see that they're actually using family planning." And then we see that men and women don't really discuss family planning enough, you know, in a setting like this. So we're currently completing development of an intervention to address these issues, and we're trying to catalyze existing social networks, moving through networks that are already there, informal networks, and to catalyze discussion and reflection in these networks about these issues. And the kind of the little slogan that we're using right now is "Approval is there, choose together." Because what we found is that there is an underlying but sort of secret support for family planning, and choice is not really the woman's alone to make. So a lot of programs working in West Africa have approached it as if the woman has the power to make the decision alone. So we think that really programs that put the responsibility only on women without recognizing the social network that she lives in are they're unrealistic. They're probably not going to be effective, and they're really disempowering to women because they're not helping her to mobilize the networks that are around her that could help her to achieve more autonomy and achieve her fertility goals. So thank you very much. If you have any questions? Any questions? I know I rushed through that social network 101. And in what, oh, no, I don't. We don't have data, because everywhere we worked, it was, everywhere we were working in the study, it is a patriarchal setting. So in terms of their positive attitudes, I think it has to do more with their greater access to information. Some other data I think I didn't present is that women are much more isolated. They do have a network around them, but they're not as well linked in to outside sources of information. They don't travel outside of the village. You know, one of the more positive kind of influences on family planning use are migrants who go and work in the capital and then come back with new information. So some women are not as exposed to that. So men, I think, have more exposure to information. So it's more on things about actual methods, side effects, things like that. Yes?
Hi, I want to ask about your question for the definition of unmet need. I feel like myself and my colleagues use that word all the time. And I thought it was interesting how you defined it, sort of by exclusion almost. And I'm wondering if you thought, if you looked at unmet need in this situation in any other way, sort of accounting for things like intention.
We are looking at it in a lot of different ways. I didn't really go into that in this presentation, but we're using the traditional kind of definition that used to be used in the DHS as one way. We're using the newer definition that now is being used in the DHS, and then we're also using women and men's own definition. So as many of you are aware, you know, unmet need is not usually looked at from a men's perspective, so that's one of the things we're trying to bring to this analysis and this experience. And then we're also, as we implement the intervention and analyze it, we'll be working much more on the unmet need definitions. But one of the definitions that we're using is proportion of segments over the last year during which a couple had, or a woman or a man, had unmet need. Because as I think you've seen by the previous presentations, unmet need is very dynamic. And it can, you know, I can be fine tomorrow, but all the tomorrow, I mean today, but tomorrow I have unmet need. So instead of using it typically looking at it retrospectively at one measure, did you have unmet need over your life or over the last year, we're going to try doing it in smaller segments. So it's a really good question, and it could be a whole other paper. Yeah. Yes?
How long you were in Mali?
Oh, I have been in Mali very infrequently. So we have partners in Mali. So I've been there. I go there every maybe 3 months and work with our partners. But do you mean, so this project has been going on, we're in the third year of the project. And I can tell you a little secret in case we talk about this next year. We actually are no longer in Mali because there was a coup last year and we couldn't use USAID funds in Mali. So we're now working in Benin and we're repeating all this analysis and trying to not lose any time and doing it in Benin with the same partners. The maps? You like the maps?
No, yeah, I really like the map-based, you know, social network application.
Uh-huh.
So did you use ArcGIS for that?
No, the maps are produced by UCINET, mm-hmm. and they have a net draw function. So, you know, we did think about using GIS to do the census and the survey, but it turned out it was too complicated. Yeah. Yes? All right, that's a really good question, and no, because this is part of the idea of this project is to develop a scalable intervention that can be, you know, really implemented on a large scale, because that's just part of what Abe's interested in. So we had to then develop a mapping technique that was low tech and easy that could be done in thousands of villages by community health workers. So we've now moved what we've learned from this project to do kind of a participatory role assessment mapping that can be done in a day and a half so that field workers can go into a village and map the networks and identify the influencers and connectors and then roll out the intervention through them. So, because you could never do this intensive research in enough villages to make a difference. So our challenge has been how to bridge that gap. to something more practical. Okay, I'm just there, the time is up, so thanks everyone.